Vigils are being held in the Rio Grande Valley for a Salvadoran father and daughter who died last week as they crossed the Rio Grande River. The bodies of Oscar Alberto Martinez Ramirez and his daughter Angie Valeria were photographed face down after they drowned trying to make it to the U.S. Among the many who reacted to the photo is Gracia Martinez. She and her family crossed the same river to get to the U.S. 22 years ago. Hi, Gracia.
Thanks for having me.
So I know you've been watching the vigil as it's gone on for the Salvadoran father, Oscar Ramirez, and for his daughter. As you watch the vigil, what are you thinking?
I'm feeling a lot of sorrow for what happened to Oscar and his little girl. And I'm feeling a lot of gratitude for my good fortune and my dad's good fortune of being able to make it more than 20 years ago across that same river. So mixed emotions.
And I want to find out about that day when you were 8 years old, 22 years ago. You had tweeted out recently when you saw the photo of Oscar Ramirez and his daughter, their bodies lying on the river as they tried to cross unsuccessfully. You tweeted out, "I wept today for the dad and daughter crossing the same river waters I crossed 22 years ago." Could you take us back to that time? You were in Hidalgo, Mexico. That's where your parents were preachers. Why did they want to leave and want you to leave Mexico?
You know, the answer is a complicated one, but I think at the core of it is just we didn't have enough to eat and we didn't have enough to dream. My mom and my dad wanted a better future for my sisters and I, and I think that they knew that if we were able to take the risk, that it would be worth it, and, you know, it was.
And specifically on that day, do you have many vivid memories about it?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those memories that when you're a young child, it's some of the few ones, and I remember walking alongside the riverbank with my dad as we were looking for the safest pathway to pass. And I, along with him, like carried this little bag where I was collecting the shiny stones around the river. And at the end, we used my bag full of like pebbles to mark the place where we would cross. And so, you know, I remember how cold the water felt, how scared I was, and the moment where the water almost took my mom away, and the way that my dad served as a anchor for both her and I.
We know that the Rio Grande is a huge river. When you're crossing it, are you crossing a large swath?
Yeah, you know, the river is large and it carries many currents around it, especially if you're an 8-year-old girl where everything seems really big to you. It felt like, I remember it feeling like a big ocean.
And at one point, your mom was almost washed away by the current. What do you remember about that?
I remember being in my dad's arms and seeing my mom sort of slip and almost be overtaken by a water current and really hanging on really tight to my dad's hand. I remember feeling really scared, but then I also remember seeing my mom's determination in my mother's eyes.
We should say that at the same time that you were crossing over, you had two older sisters who were born in the U.S., so they had U.S. passports, and they were able to cross here traditional means.
Yeah, I have two U.S. citizen sisters that because of that documentation, they were able to cross the bridge into the U.S. just going in by a car. And I think that that marks also like something significant in us that although our family was led by undocumented people, our mom and our dad, that this pain that is happening right now in our communities touches all of us, including the U.S. citizen children of undocumented parents and all of the community connected to that family.
So this gets to the heart of what happens when families are trying to come here with documentation and without documentation. Your family built a life in Dallas, Texas. Your parents bought a home in Dallas. Then something happened to your father in 2009. What was it?
My father was just, you know, driving down the street in North Dallas, and he was just too brown driving a truck in a too white neighborhood. And it meant that in a matter of weeks, ICE and CBP deported him and separated him from a life. I haven't hugged my father in 10 years, and that's a direct result of U.S. policy of separating families that has been going on for decades.
And your sisters, we should say, have been able to go back and see your father because, again, they are U.S. citizens. I wonder if you can look at this from the perspective of United States officials when there are thousands and thousands of people trying to get to the United States. How do you think the U.S. should respond to this?
What we are seeing at the border today is a humanitarian crisis. The reality is that members of Congress have continued to call for oversight and accountability of the agencies that are locking our children up in cages. And I think that it is our responsibility as people that have built this country. And honestly, as taxpayers, we are the bosses of the DHS, ICE, and CBP agents. And the reality is that this is a moral and political decision for all of us, and all of us will be responsible for what happens in the next couple of years.
It is more than that, though. I mean, when you think about it, the Border Patrol, U.S. Border Patrol, says it has made almost 600,000 Southwest border apprehensions since October of 2018. That would be a lot for the U.S. to take in. So understanding your point of view, do you understand the U.S. point of view?
I think that it's important to be able to be clear about that. Unfortunately, given the current administration, we are not able to trust those numbers, given that it's unclear how they are counting those people.
Let me just say, you agree that it is a state of emergency, that things are dire there. So even if the exact number isn't correct, we know that it's hundreds of thousands of people who've tried to come here.
That's right.
So what do you see is the way around that?
I think it'll be important to finance humanitarian operations that ensure that children are reunited with their families. I think that we can do it. We have the resources. But what is clear here is that that is not the intention of CBP and this Trump administration of handling this issue like a humanitarian crisis. If so, we would have Red Cross agents there. We would have FEMA there. But instead, we have agents with guns waiting and receiving these people that are refugees. And so I can hear the voice of some of the ICE and CBP agents saying, we don't want to oversee anything like this. And I think that it's important for us to listen to that as well.
CBP being Customs and Border Patrol. I want to ask you also about the Supreme Court decision that opens up the Supreme Court to hearing cases about President Trump's decision on the DACA program. He's trying to end the protections for undocumented immigrants. And you are in the DACA program, covered by the program yourself. How do you personally have an interest in this, in what happens?
Well, I'm a big sister, and my sister has a DACA as well as I do. I think that it's an important moment in our U.S. history. I am hopeful that the Supreme Court will side on the rule of law and the Constitution, and that would ensure that the DACA program continues in place, because I think that we have seen numerous circuit court judges saying that, unfortunately, Trump has killed the program by arbitrary and capricious means, which has impacted not only my life in the last couple of months, but has meant that 15-year-old undocumented young people that are growing up in Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada are not able to apply for the DACA protection program.
Have you made plans in the event? I mean, you have a significant job and quite a life here right now. Have you made contingency plans in case you are deported?
You know, I was detained by CBP during one of my trips, and I was really close to being deported. I remember the feeling of saying, I am one of 11 million people whose lives are at stake right now. And I am prepared to continue organizing, whether it's within the U.S. or outside of it, because we know that migration is a global issue. So, yes, I have a plan to continue to fight. I have a plan to go and hug my dad, if that's the case, and then to start off the structure to continue to ensure that this country that I have grown up with sort of shows up to its promises that we've made to each other.
Graysa Martinez, Deputy Executive Director of the immigrant advocacy organization United We Dream. She's based in Washington, D.C. She is also a DACA recipient. Thank you, Graysa.
Thanks for having me.